I don't know if I would have had my kids if I didn't go through that. Met my husband if I wouldn't have gone through that.
Then I need a few more so I can go and talk to a girl. I need a few more so I could. And it was just actually looking back again. I used to go out with people that I didn't feel like I could.
I realized once I wanted that change, I wanted to see the best in myself. I wanted to love myself. I wanted to face whatever I was numbing, all the traumas, all
the hardest thing that I'll probably will ever have to do. And if I can do that, I can do anything.
My name is Jimmy Thistle.
Fast am I. Welcome to Radio Vanin.
Thank you, Christy Gurmide. It's such a pleasure to be here in front of you again. Yeah,
It's lovely to see you. I think the last time we were talking, it was probably about your photography, or were you off doing some...
It was the walk.
Walk, yes, you were doing the walk,
yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah. That was over 2 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so that was, yeah.
Going past us on Douglas Head.
Yeah, and it was a fantastic experience. And, you know, we did raise a lot for Motivate. It was so good. But thank you again for having me in for that, because it did raise awareness and, you know, bringing it to the forefront. Yeah.
And of course, you've just recently done the Road to Recovery Walk as well, which I've had a lot of people attended that, and what a wonderful event it was. But all this we're talking to you about because you have your own podcast. And this, I remember a little while ago, you messaged me about this and said, you know, you're starting up this podcast. It has gone great guns, this, hasn't it? Tell us a little bit about it.
I kind of had the idea for a while. When I first got sober, like, you know, over 5 years ago now, I started doing little snippets and little short long form videos on YouTube, and, you know, and that was going well, and I still kind of do that. But for me, the main tool in my recovery box was going into meetings, whether it be SMART, AA, NA, all of those, and listening to other people's stories. But as you know, those are anonymous. You're not allowed to bring the stories out. And, you know, and I wouldn't want to share other people's stories unless I was talking to them. And yet there are, you know, a load of recovery type podcasts out there. But I thought, why not add another one, you know, and add a bit of a different kind of angle to it. So I've just got some, I mean, it's been going since January this year. So what are we on, you know, about 10 months nearly now. So yeah. And it's, you know, I've had a few of the... I would call them big players on Instagram, people like Sober Dave and Louisa Evans. I don't want to kind of, you know, make it that I'm just going for the big players. Do you know what I mean? It's more about listening to the real people's stories. And that is what helped me. So I think by getting these people's stories out and just having a conversation with them, because it is, I don't like the word interview. It's just a chat. We're having, you know, they're a guest and we're having a chat. And it's a bit about my drinking days, but it's mostly, we go right back, we learn about their a bit about their childhood, when they had their first drink, which I would have to say about 80-90% of my guests, it's 14, you know.
Really?
Yeah, 14's kind of the kind of average. I was 14. But as I say, some of them were as bad, if not worse, as me. You know, and we've spoken before, my addiction got to the point where I was waking up in the morning and the first thing I was doing was drinking vodka. Towards the end. But, it, you know, it wasn't always like that with me. I did drink socially, and I had, you know, good times with it. You know, as I say, I don't have any regrets, but some of the guests and the ones that I'm really trying to get on now are what people would call maybe grey area drinkers, where they're not a huge problem. They're not drinking in the morning. They're maybe having a glass of wine or two on an evening, on a Tuesday. Maybe they've had a good day at work. Maybe it's a bad day. And they go straight to that wine, but they're starting to notice that it's causing a negative impact in their life, you know, and that's the kind of main thing here. What I want with the podcast is to make people have a bit more of awareness. You know, we're in what is it called, Sober October, all the rest of it. We've just had September, which I think is the International Recovery Month. And my thing is, you know, there's a great saying that says, if you think you've got a problem with alcohol, then you've got a problem with alcohol. And I think if people are giving up for, you know, Sober October and they're white knuckling it, or they're finding it hard to do that, like, it shouldn't be hard to give something up unless it's a problem, you know. But you see it the same, like, with, you know, dry January, and people are like, oh my God, I've got like 3 or 4 or a week to go till February. I can't wait to have that drink. And it's like, why? Why are you yearning after something so much? Because what does it actually bring you? You know, maybe an hour, 2 hours of a bit of a buzz and a bit of fun, and then the rest of the night, if you're continuing drinking all night, is kind of lost to the ether, really, you know?
It is one of those complicated things, though, isn't it, I think? Because a lot of people, you know, if you have a hard day at work or a hard day in general, yeah, maybe the kids have been really playing up, maybe you've got, you know, sort of difficulty with your relationship or whatever, it's seen as something of a sort of sometimes a calming thing to have, like a little glass of something. Sometimes it's seen as a reward if you, yeah, know, it feels like, well, I've done well today, so I'm going to have a glass of wine. But it can also be, I've had a rubbish day, so I'm going to have a glass of wine. We think of reasons, don't we?
Yeah.
To just go to a bottle of something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, prime example, you know, in my drinking days, I mean, I suppose it was a bit of an issue then, but I would go hiking. And I would take, you know, like a hip flask with me when I was, and I'd get to the top. And that is a thing. I think they call it like topping off the mountain or whatever. You get to the top and you have a little swig. You know, then you go to the pub for, you know, a bit of a meal and a few pints. And that's fine. And I think you can get beer at the cinema now, you know, which is, it is ingrained in our society. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is, the thing is that I had no idea just quite how dangerous it was. You know, there's 7 types of cancers that are related to alcohol use. In 1988, the World Health Organization classed it as a Category 1 carcinogen. So with tobacco, asbestos and radiation, it's up there, but no one knows about that.
No.
You know, and we're not putting any warnings on the bottles and things like that. I think Ireland and possibly Canada have started doing that. Like, I don't want people to start, you know, sending me hate messages. Hey, he's trying to stop us drinking. I'm not trying to do that. I just want people to be aware of how, you know, your drinking habits can be detrimental to your health. And I think, you know, being the Isle of Man, being, you know, biosphere nation, we should be at the forefront of bringing that in and saying, listen, we want to look after our people. Let's put labels on it and let them make up their own mind, you know. And I think that's what, like, I have a lot of friends that are listening to the podcast. And they drink, they've not got an issue with it. But a lot of them are starting to think about their behaviours and their habits as well, and thinking, oh, you know, I didn't know it was a danger to me as well. Because I had no idea. No one tells you. All it says is drink responsibly.
And the thing that you find when you hear the stories is how quickly and easily it can become a problem, yeah, from just, oh, I just have a glass of wine with dinner.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, it, you know, when you listen to people talk about it, it's, well, it was all right to start with, but yeah, then... And it's very easy to get to that point, isn't it, of it just tipping over.
So easy. Like I say, everyone that I spoke to on the podcast and, you know, meetings and that, none of us wanted to have an addiction problem. I didn't set out when I had my first drink with my friends when I was 14 thinking, oh, by the time I'm 40, I want to be struggling with an addiction. And in fact, I had a guy on the podcast, I think it was the last episode from this one, Will, he... He's an advocate of cold water swimming. He's got a plunge pool in his garden. He never had a problem with alcohol, and he would maybe drink. He'd go out with the boys, and he would drink and drink and drink, but he would only do it like once, maybe twice a month. So it wasn't through the week. But there was one night he was putting the kids to bed, and they were just being an absolute nightmare. And he finally got them down, and he just thought, I need a beer. And it was that word, need. And he just kind of... You know, played the tape forward into the future, and he thought, well, why would I want to play that gauntlet? You know, that it could develop into a problem where it's because he's seen people, I don't know if it was in his family or friends and that, and he thought, I don't want to play that dangerous game. So he just knocked it in the head. So he's someone that wasn't even a grey area drinker, but thought, I don't need this in my life. And you know what? His life is just so much better since he's cut it out.
But you know what? Yeah. Most people listening will have that thought fairly regularly,
yeah,
of, you know, this has been hard, so I need a drink of something. That, I think, is quite a common thought.
Oh, of course it is, because it's what society's kind of told us to do. Like, we maybe watch our parents do it, and they've watched their parents do it. So it's just this normalised behaviour in society that, what are you going to do if... Like, you see the movies, and something nefarious has happened, or there's been a death or whatever, and the guys sit round the table and they pour the brandy and the nice glasses and all of those things. Like
a ritual too.
Like a ritual, and, yeah. And we see that on screen and we think, oh, that's what we do in those situations. And like, if you look at the soap operas, all of them are based around a pub, I don't watch soaps, but, you know, we're all, you know, the nation's watching those and they're all based around. And I know that pubs and that, they're a social hub and I get all that, but it's just been a bit of awareness about, you know, what you're doing to yourself.
I think that, for me, I think that there's different elements in this. So first of all, when you're a teenager, there's that notion of wanting to fit in. And I know one of your guests has recently been talking about that, that notion. It was Ollie or someone talking about wanting to fit in and so starting drinking at a teenager, and it went from there. There's also that element of when you're a child, you don't, oh, you're not allowed alcohol when you're a child. Obviously, you're not allowed alcohol when you're a kid. And so when you become an adult, it's, oh, I'm allowed that now. And it sort of feels like a rite of passage of, I'm 18, I can go and get myself a drink. And there's that element of sort of excitement about it as well. So there's so much linked in with having a drink that feels positive somehow, or feels exciting, or feels, but so I mean, trying to break that down and trying to change someone's perspective has got to be pretty tricky.
Oh, absolutely. And but also the thing, I mean, I know what you're saying, and it is a bit dangerous because we do it a little bit underage in our country, a bit rebellious.
Well.
It's like, oh, well, my parents are doing it, so it can't be that bad. So I'll just, you know,
and your friends are doing it, so you feel the pressure.
But then it gives you that confidence, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, that initial confidence when you're just like, you tell me a teenager that hasn't got anxiety about, you know, social situations and all that. There's like a couple and they're like, you know, oh my God, to be like that. But, you know, majority of people have got this, oh, I don't know what to say, or am I being funny, or have I got enough chat and all that. So when you go out and you discover alcohol, it's like, you know, you're just opened up and you're loose. So we kind of stunt that kind of bravery, like developing, because I think it's the frontal, the prefrontal cortex, don't know, doesn't develop until we're about 25, 26. So if we're using alcohol as a crutch, you know, by the time we're 17, 18, 19, we're not letting ourselves develop into kind of social situations without anxiety. I was 40 before I started socializing without alcohol, and it's scary. Don't get me wrong. It's scary. You know, I still go, oh my God, there's lots of people and all that. But because we tend to just use alcohol, then it makes it easier.
And we turn to it so easily, don't we? For so many different things. That's the issue. And I mean, let's come to the podcast itself and talk about some of the people you've interviewed, because they are from such a huge variety of backgrounds, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, like, we're getting a lot of Canadians on, all different ages as well. The thing with alcoholism or you know, addiction, it doesn't discriminate. You know, it could be your banker, your baker, your baller. It really doesn't discriminate, and I think that's why having so many different kind of varieties of guests on the podcast, it's just showing to people that, you know, like, you don't have to be someone sat on a park bench with a bottle in a brown paper bag. It's really, that's the kind of stigma that surrounded the words, you know, alcoholic, and it's really not at all. There's so many people that, you know, like Kate Turner, who was, I think, my third guest, single mum, lives in the Peaks, sober in the Peaks is her Instagram handle. Go check her out. She's, you know, she wasn't like a full-blown alcoholic or anything like that, but she was having this massive negative impact on her life, and she just thought, I need to give it up. She went through a lot of different kind of, like, giving up, maybe a week, couple of weeks, maybe a month, and then going back to it. And I think a lot of that was a lot of peer pressure as well, you know, and it's this societal norm that we do it. And it's like, well, what else are you going to do? But now she's out walking in the hills. She does, you know, seawater swimming, cold water swimming. And yeah, and then, but then you've got other people like Sober Dave, who, you know, he's massive on Instagram, and I think he's about 61 now. He gave up 6 years ago, I think it is now. So, you know, he was quite a late one to it, and he doesn't remember his 40s, you know, because that's how bad it got. He would just come home from work. He actually worked on that program, 60 Minute Makeover. Mm-hmm. So he was doing all that, living in that kind of, you know, media world where they were going to hotels and things like that. But as soon as he got back from that, got in his house, bottle of vodka, switched the lights off, put the music on, and just disappear into his own little... He used to say goodbye reality because that was how bad it was for him.
Oh my goodness. And you mentioned, you know, sort of pressure from those around you because the difficulties, and I've got to say, anyone who's been through this journey has my absolute respect because it is a difficult journey because when you make that decision, which in itself is so hard to come to because of the awareness you have to know you've got the problem in the first place.
Yeah.
But then, of course, everyone around you is still carrying on with their usual lives, which is probably going to the pub, going out for dinner and ordering bottles of wine. Mm-hmm. And so you then have all of these temptations around you constantly, which, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it?
It is difficult. And for me, I was quite lucky because I'd not long moved back to the Isle of Man. So I didn't really know that many people. My whole kind of circle of friends were from like motivating the meetings and things like that. But I understand from, you know, normal people that it's like normal people. But, you know, people that are just think, right, I'm going to knock this in the head, but what do I do? To be honest, you go out and you tell your friends, you be open and honest with it. And if they have a problem with that, it probably says more about their habits than yours. And also just keep trying to go. Like if you enjoy yourself when you go out and you're not having a drink, then great, you know. But if you don't enjoy yourself and you think, well, this isn't really for me, then you don't have to keep doing that, you know. It's like there is so many other things to do. Like a lot of people said to me, what are you going to do now you've stopped drinking? Like, well, everything else. Going to the pub and clubs and things like that isn't the be-all and end-all. There is other things in life to do than sitting in a bar.
And to be
fair,
especially on the Isle of Man, there's loads to do over here. In the creative world, the cultural world over here. You're learning Manx, you know.
Learning Manx. Yeah. You know, going out for hikes, you know, seawater swimming, cold water swimming. But it's just that thing like I've been to pubs. Restaurants are a different story because you're not... I would never go out there and just drink. You know, I might have had a glass of wine with my meal, but... Like, when I go to pubs now, I'm like, this isn't really where I want to be because there's not really... people are probably going to hate this, but I don't think there's a human connection in pubs because people are normally like 3-4 drinks in. They're not really listening to the other person that they're speaking to. They're waiting for a chance where they can then tell them that story that they've told maybe 3 or 4 times, you know. And it's like being in there, it's loud, it's noisy, but I'm just like, this is not where I want to be anymore, you know. And I think a lot of people that get sober then realize that and they're like, I'm going to do other things. Plus your weekend's not written off, you know.
That's true. I mean, it does feel like there's slightly more acceptance now for being out and not having alcoholic drinks when you're out. It seems, and there seems to be more young people maybe who aren't getting into the whole drinking thing, or am I wrong?
Well, I mean, I don't know the exact facts and figures, but I think there is a lot less. I think the reason is phones, you know. When we were younger, there was no, well, not just that, there's no video evidence of you being an absolute idiot. Now there is. So people are very conscious of their self-image. So if they go out and get completely out of control, because that's what alcohol does, let's be honest, it makes you do things that you wouldn't normally do. So drink responsibly. I don't think that works on the bottles, but they're very aware that if they do something stupid, that's going to be all around, well, school, college, whatever, and they're going to be made a fool of. So they're very cautious of that. But also the fact is, they Google things and they'll probably see, alcohol's not really good for me. So I'm very health conscious and I don't want to put that in my body. But it's like smoking. They're not really smoking as much. Yeah, I think they vape, but the jury's still out on whether vaping's, you know, it's definitely not as bad for you smoking, but I think they're hardly smoking at all anymore either. So I do think alcohol will kind of go that way as well eventually. I think people start to realise that it serves no purpose, and apart from the first couple of drinks, after that is just kind of chasing that initial hit which you never really get to. And there is the darker side of it as well, because alcohol does kind of tend to, like, all of my guests, well, the majority of them, they all end up drinking on their own, and even if they've got a partner, they're doing it in secret, they're hiding bottles, and the addiction wants you on your own. It doesn't want, and so people start pushing, you know, friends, family away because of that, and they don't want to blame anything. They want to blame everything else but the alcohol. And that was exactly how I was as well. And I see the pattern in time and time again with the guests as well. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your journey as well, because, your life is a very different life now, isn't it?
Yeah, without a doubt. It's 5 years in August it was, and it's just unbelievable now. You know, married in August, and to, you know, just the most amazing woman ever. I've got three amazing stepkids. So yeah, if you told me that 5 years ago when I'd just been like, what would I be, maybe a month and a bit sober, 2 months sober, I would have been like, yeah, whatever, let me get through this day. Because it was, but at that point it was one day at a time. And that goes as well, you know, there's a lot of people at the beginning and they're like, oh, I don't know how to get to the next day and all that. And then even a year and they're like, I still have thoughts. Like, I know for a fact that I'm never going to have an alcoholic drink again, you know. And I know a lot of the meetings say, oh, you should never say never, and it's one day at a time and all that. Yeah, I know I'm not going to, because I don't hanker after it. I don't have any reason to, and I know where I'll end up if I do have one again.
But of course, everyone's journey is different, we should say that. And yeah. So I suppose if someone's listening, they are a little bit concerned about themselves, mm-hmm. what do you think, what would be the first steps, do you think?
Yeah, so I would definitely try and go to a situation where they would normally drink and do it without alcohol, mm-hmm. and see how much they're affected by that, on how much they feel they're being pulled to have a drink. And if that's the case, then yeah, try and give it up for at least a month to begin with. But I mean, I always say three. Like, if people are doing Sober October or Dry January, it's not enough, I think, to feel the full difference and get the clarity of mind and even your skin getting better and in your wallet. 3 months is where it's at. You know, they always say like 90 days to 100 days is really where you start to notice a difference. You'll be clearer, focused mind, and you won't have that same pull of the alcohol as well, because you're kind of 3 months done and you think, well, I might as well carry on. And a lot of the people on the podcast have initially just set out to do 100 days, and then they've just carried on because they thought, why would I go back to that? Because I feel better, I look better, I've got more money, but I'm still managing to do all the things that I was doing before. Maybe not going to the pub as much as they were, but they're spending more time with their family. It's like, you know, that's that old thing, like, finish work on a Friday and go to the pub, but you've got family at home. Why are you doing that? You know, I mean, obviously I've got, you know, a new family and I can't wait to get home and spend time with them, and that's what it should be about. It's not spending time in dingy bars, is it?
No. Well, you certainly got this thing licked. I'm really, really pleased for you, Jimmy. One other question then, because if someone's listening and they're concerned about a friend or family member, how do you support someone who's going through this?
Yeah, just be honest with them and tell them straight up. You know, people were honest to me at the beginning and I didn't want to listen to it. The hardest thing is don't give up on them. You know, obviously we've spoken about Motivate. They're a great source of help, not just for the people going through it, but also the family as well, or friends. So if they're not wanting to listen to it, they can go and get counselling individually from Motivate as well on a one-to-one basis. The thing is, with the person that's going through addiction, they have to be ready to do it themselves. And as much as you can say to them, they've got to do it for themselves. I got sober for other reasons back in the day and it didn't stick. And I went back out and relapsed. So I had to do it for myself. And when I finally did it, it was just for me. It's the last selfish thing that someone in addiction will do. But I think just be there for them, support them, and tell them that they're not alone, because, you know, and like a lot of young people don't, the younger people or whatever, people aren't going into meetings as much anymore, I don't think, like the old AA or NA or even SMART. People are going into that, but I think a lot of people are getting help online and support online. You know, for me, it was listening to YouTubes, watching films, reading books and listening to podcasts. You know, I'm not saying that come and listen to my podcast and it'll help you get sober, but it'll make you listen for the similarities in other people's stories and understand that, you know, you're not the only one. I used to hide bottles behind the stem of the sink in the bathroom and I thought I was super crafty. Turns out loads of people do it. It's not. It's just a kind of alcoholic trait. We hide it there and it's a good place to hide it because no one's really going to look there.
Find the strength to face those things. It gets a lot easier than every day you're sober. And it's tough at first. It's rough. But if you have a support system, and I think having a support group, having people to talk to, having people you're comfortable with to open up and vent to is great to have. Just don't do it alone, you know? You don't want to be alone in this.
You know, the hardest times build the toughest armor, and the hardest things can bring on the best of things. And so those hard things can make you into such a confident and such a tough person. So any hard thing that comes my way now, I'm ready for.
Do listen to Jimmy's podcast because it is brilliant. Where can people find it, Jimmy?
So it's called After Hours with Jimmy Thistle, and they can find it on any of your preferred platform podcast platforms. I've just started doing the video as well. So the initial, there's 43 or 44 episodes out at the moment, and I think about 6 or 7 of them are on video. You can get the video on Spotify and on YouTube, but all the rest is on audio as well.
Well, all the very best with it. It's obviously doing great stuff, and it's really hopefully changing people's lives. Yeah, so, Gurumayed.
Gurumayed.
As he moo, wouldn't you?
He moo. Thank you, Christy. Cheers.